Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. Issues in Science and Technology, a joint publication of the National Academies and the University of Texas, Dallas, has been a forum for discussion of public policy related to science for 25 years. Although Issues is published by the scientific and technical communities, it's not just a platform for these communities to present their views to Congress and the public. Instead, it's a place where researchers, government officials, business leaders, and others with a stake in public policy can share ideas and offer specific suggestions. To mark their silver anniversary, the folks at Issues published a special, and in some ways, an unusual issue. Editor-in-Chief Kevin Finneran explains.
We decided to do something a little bit different. We went for very high-profile authors, and we started out with the advantage of having Barack Obama giving a big speech at the NAS annual meeting. So we used that as a starting point. We went to a lot of people who we think of as serious thinkers and ambitious thinkers and said, why don't you talk about something that you think is achievable in the next 5 years, and then give us some more information about what we have to do to get there in 5 years. What are the practical steps we have to start taking right now? So that's what we did, and we have about, 15 articles or so that address a whole range of questions from medical health records to science education to traffic to energy to agriculture.
One of the more interesting articles is called The Cloud, The Crowd, and Public Policy, written by Michael Nelson, a visiting professor at Georgetown University and the former director of Internet Technology and Strategy at IBM. By way of setting the stage, you only have to look around you when you're out and about in the world. These days, it seems like everyone and everything is connected to the web. Coffee houses, airports, and city parks are all hotspots, taking the Internet out of our homes and workplaces. iPhones, iTouches, Blackberries, and netbooks have made the Internet mobile, allowing us to roam the web whenever and however we want. It's hard to imagine life before Google, GPS, and a whole host of other apps, but I'm old enough to remember when that was, in fact, the status quo. Looking forward, it isn't so hard to imagine that the technology will continue to grow and change, and that in a few years it may be completely realistic that the web will no longer be a web, but a cloud. The Internet is entering a new phase, a phase that represents a fundamental shift in how things are done. Finneran explains our rapid progression through this phase, which is called cloud computing.
We began with computers in which everything took place in the computer itself. If you wanted data in the computer, somebody gave you a disk and you plugged it in and you put your data and you stored your software there and you stored all your information there. Then, of course, the Internet came along and we were able to get access to information outside the computer, but the software and all the actions still took place on your actual computer on your desk. The cloud, the software as well as the data now would move off your desk. It'll exist in shared space. And this is really what we see already with Facebook or Gmail or Flickr. I mean, with Gmail, you don't have software on your computer. It's not like Outlook where you've got to install a program in order to have your mail. The software exists. You just plug into it over the Internet, and then you can use it. And what Mike Nelson is writing about is the potential for doing a whole lot more in that shared space. It raises lots of opportunities, but also does create some problems or potential difficulties.
Cloud computing has the potential to reduce the cost and complexity of doing both routine computing tasks and computationally intensive research problems. By providing far more computing power at lower cost, cloud computing could enable researchers to tackle previously impossible challenges in genome research, environmental modeling, analysis of living systems, and dozens of other fields. Furthermore, by enabling large distributed research teams to more effectively share data and computing resources, cloud computing will facilitate the kind of multidisciplinary research needed to better understand ecosystems, global climate change, ocean currents, and other complex phenomena. The pace of development and the deployment of the cloud will depend on a variety of different factors. But the question is, when will we be completely in the cloud?
I mean, in some ways, it already exists. I mean, many of us, as I pointed out, with Gmail, Flickr, Facebook, already are in the cloud. But for it to really be widespread, a number of other things will have to take place. I mean, there are problems to resolve about ownership, responsibility, intellectual property, and so on. But it's clearly going to happen. I guess the only question is when you'd say we exist primarily in the cloud or primarily still on our desktop. You know, the enthusiasts will say we're already in the cloud, and if you're not there, you're behind. But clearly, most of our work, I think, is still done on our laptops and desktops.
We sit at a juncture where government policy can either accelerate or hinder the growth of the cloud. Just as the pace of the development of the Internet has varied by country and by industry, the pace of the development of the cloud will vary widely. Nelson thinks government will have a vital role in the cloud.
Well, he sees an extensive role, and he sees government playing a number of roles. Some of them are similar to the roles that it played with the development of the computer and the Internet. It did the research. It was a pioneer in applying this. And it can do the same thing in the case of the cloud. So just as the Internet began as DARPANET and then expanded to NSFNET and then gradually became the Internet that we all participate in, there's no reason why the government, which is a very large user of computing power, needs a lot of data in its work, couldn't start doing this, couldn't start setting the standards that allow for everybody to have access, for software to work across a number of different platforms and so on. So they can be doing that basic foundational work.
But Finneran warns, there are also a lot more complicated issues that will have to be worked out as we go along.
Government has a role in setting standards for security, for example. And in an area like medical records, which would be a perfect application of the cloud, because we keep talking about the electronic medical record, but if the electronic medical record exists only in the hospital where you've been going, it's not that much better than a paper record, because when you have an accident somewhere or you move and you're in another hospital, if they don't have easy access to it, it doesn't matter if it's digital or on paper, they can't see it. So this is the type of information that you would love to have easy access to.
Of course, this also raises another question that the government will have to deal with, which is, how do we ensure individual privacy and general security in the cloud?
One of the biggest barriers to a patient medical record or computer record is that people worry about it being compromised, that people they don't want to have access to it getting access to it. So this is the type of thing where government can experiment with this. Certainly if they start in the Defense Department, they're very conscious of security and they're very good at it. So if they help us develop good foolproof security systems that we can then use in medical records and then in other applications, that will do us a lot of good. And then there'll be other issues that they have to deal with. There's an intellectual property issue. We know that software, you purchase it, it's patented, copyrighted, however it's protected. There are going to be problems with that when it's shared software and, you know, who pays for it, who owns it. If things go wrong, who's liable for it? I mean, now you lose, you know, if you drop your computer and your hard drive gets wrecked, it's your own fault. But if something happens out there in the cloud, it's not obvious yet who will be responsible for that. So government will have to set rules about that, new rules about the way software intellectual property is governed.
And then there will inevitably be issues surrounding economic competition and capture of the market.
For this to be useful, we have to make sure that it's open to new players, that everybody can participate, that a few people don't capture the cloud and then limit it, charge excessive price for it, and so on. So again, government antitrust regulation can play a role.
Many of the public policy issues raised by cloud computing are similar to the internet policy issues that governments have been struggling with for at least the last 15 years. But addressing these issues for the cloud will be at least twice as difficult and five times more important. Because the cloud is inherently global, policy solutions must be cross-jurisdictional. Because the cloud is a many-to-many medium, it's not always easy to determine who's responsible for what. And because the cloud technology and cloud application are evolving so quickly, government policy must be flexible and adaptable. You can find Michael Nelson's full article on the cloud and the other five-year plans in the summer 2009 issue of Issues in Science and Technology. My name is Anne Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.